Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Horror, Wine, and Crime with KK and Lo. Lo, how goes it?
It goes.
It goes pretty good. Me and Lo were having some good laughs before we hit record here because we're sadly not in person recording this time.
But I can see her now, so kudos.
Yes. And we don't know what happened. Last time she saw me, I was like, wiggly, like the camera was like delayed, but now it's not happening. So we're off to a good start today.
Yes. It's 'tis the season. We're getting closer to that Christmas holiday. I am about 89% done with all my shopping. Just still a little few things. I got KK's last part of her gift coming tomorrow, and she'll be wrapped up and put under my tree.
Aw, so exciting. I'm probably like 68% done.
Okay.
Very specific number, but 68 is what I'd say. But I'm always like that every year.
63.2%.
Yeah. Super specific. I calculate it, actually. But no, I always get it accomplished. It just is a little more delayed. I'm not a super prepared person. Just kind of like wing it last minute in my life.
I got you.
But sometimes that's when the best things happen, right?
Get all those little extra sales.
I know, right? Exactly.
So before Crystal dives into the meat of the story, and I want to keep it short, we're not going to ramble on a whole lot before the story, but I just want to say, if you listened last week, I talked about the weenie whistle, and I've been asking like all my old clients, and when I say old, I mean like older, they're like in their 80s, if they know what a weenie whistle is. And some of them didn't know what I was talking about at first, and some of them like, oh, okay. Some of them didn't. So obviously the weenie whistle was not as a popular old toy as I thought it was. However, I'm sticking with it. I'm standing by it. I'm doubling down. Okay. Watch the Santa Claus movie. You'll see what I'm talking about. I may even post a clip of it later just to verify my weenie whistle.
I saw it. She saw it to me, guys. I saw it.
I saw it to her.
It's true.
And then, speaking of weenies.
I like the transition.
If you guys haven't seen it, Justin Timberlake was not having a good moment in Nashville, okay? His harness cut off some blood circulation, and it showed his little package. And I mean, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended. Some people loved it. Some people were making jokes. More jokes were like, dang, Jessica, that's what you had to deal with. You know, all the shit he put you through, and that's all you got. Like, someone I think said, like, okay, Brittany, you know. But yeah, doesn't look like he had a whole lot to work with there. There were some scenes where it looked like he was trying to pull his shirt down a little bit, but he also had to keep dancing and singing, but oh, yeah. How the laughter came in. I had to immediately send it to KK.
Oh, and I immediately laughed because, yeah, people are savage, but it's like, you know, when it's like funny but true type thing, it's like, it's very true. Like, the whole thing was like his, you know, his junk in the front, but it was like really...
Yeah,
due small to the storage area.
Due to the blood circulation, it was making a point, full extended, and well, there wasn't much extension.
No, you would think it wasn't full extension, but by the way that it looked, but yeah, not sure the appeal for the really famous, successful women that he gets.
Which, if he was a better person, then I could be like, okay, you know, like.
Right.
But because he's kind of like a shady womanizer, I'm like, really? Okay, whatever, mm-hmm. dude. So maybe I was just telling Kay that maybe this is the year for the karma, because celebrities and uncelebrities, I'm finding out people who have just been shitty and just have been doing not nice things, it's starting to catch up with them. I mean, we got Diddy, we got Timberlake, you know, probably
Jay-Z now.
Jay-Z, which is probably going to lead to Beyonce, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if 25 is going to be the year that, the year of the karma, like the karma is coming to get all your asses. So if you're being an asshole, you better stop now and start doing some good deeds, because it's coming. It's going to snatch your ass up.
It's going to come before you know it. I swear, all those people that like whole scary, terrible, mean shit show that they started is now literally full throttle catching up to them.
Yeah.
In like a ginormous way. As it should.
Amen, sister.
But yeah, it is kind of funny because like, you know, Diddy's is like, he's in like prison and stuff, but like, JT's is just, he just keeps getting humiliated, but like he just keeps basically doing it to himself, I feel like, really, you know what I mean? Like people are just like, it's like he's just like kind of doing it to himself. It's not like anybody's,
it's self-sabotaging, like, kind of,
yeah,
like DUI, like,
yeah, oh gosh. So his definitely makes me giggle. But yeah, Lo sent me that. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out. But yeah, she sent it to me and she gave me a really good mid-workday laugh. So appreciate it, Lo.
And also, if you are interested in the Diddy case, because I try to stay in tuned, I didn't have the brain power and patience and all the whatever to try to put it in chronicle order, how everything happened. But our podcast queen, or at least mine, that I like to listen to, Big Mad True Crime.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing it. She's on, I think next week is week 5. And she started from his high school life. And she's breaking everything down in order of. So if you want to keep up on the Diddy Chronicle of how everything is playing about, I would listen to her, Big Mad True Crime. Oh.
If she's starting from high school, like, sounds like she's going to have, like, a ton of info and, like, get extensive. She gets, like, pretty extensive with stuff, so.
Yeah, so shout out to Heather Ashley. You're killing it.
Yes. Oh, always. Always is. Yeah. I think that was all the fun stuff to talk about. Unless you had something else before we get into the not so fun stuff.
Nope, I am going to give the show over to you, and I am going to sit back with the creepies and get creeped out with them.
Very, very creeped out. Yeah, I'm going to turn the mood down quite a bit, so sorry for that. But you guys know what you tune in for. Yeah, it was funny because, you know, we were talking before I knew, like, what story I was doing, and you know, Lo was like, oh, maybe we could do like a lighter, funner type Christmas, like
Mary Morons.
Yeah, like how last week's was. And I'm like looking and I'm like having such a hard time like really finding a good one to do. But like the sad thing is, like I told Lo before this, it's like way easier to find like horrible Christmas crimes than like just little like goofy, lighthearted ones. So yeah, I went with the darker route. So sorry about that. But at least the last 2 weeks, I feel like we had kind of more fun stories going on. So I'm just going to bring down the mood for Christmas.
Yeah, your wife peeking peekaboo story, it's like all over TikTok. Everybody's like, updates. What's going on? Is there another update? Like, hello? Like,
yes.
People are waiting to find out what the next part is.
I need to know. I'm like, where is this guy? Like, did his wife get him? Or is he like working on a novel right now? Like, what's happening? If you guys didn't listen to that, go back. It's like 2 episodes ago or something. a really good story. This guy needs like a, he needs like a book deal, I swear. Yeah, we need an update on that. But yeah, so down we go. We're going to be talking about a family Christmas murder. So definitely a downer. Before I begin, though, too, I almost forgot. I did want to say we want to give our condolences and like our thoughts and prayers to all the families that were affected by the school shooting that just occurred a couple days ago, or at least from the time we're recording this a couple days ago, in Madison, Wisconsin. And, you know, it happened at a Christian school with a lot, like younger children. The school was called Abundant Life Christian School. And they just, I don't know if they announced it today or yesterday, but they identified who the shooter was, and it was a 15-year-old female student. Really sad. I guess a second grader was the one that called the police while the shooting was happening. Two people died, a teacher and a teenage student, while six others were injured, with two of them having really critical conditions. So just a really, really, really unfortunate thing that occurred, and it's just getting way out of hand, the amount of mass shootings that there are. It's like, I don't, like, when is something going to change to like stop this from happening? Because I read something too that this year there was the highest amount of mass shootings in the country, like on record. So it's like the fact that it's just going up and up, and especially at schools too, is, it's just really disappointing. And yeah, so just all of our thoughts and prayers out to those families that were affected.
Absolutely. I will say though, I am surprised that it was a girl this time. Usually they're boys. It's more known to be boys than girls. But it just goes to show you that mental health will strike anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. When I heard that, it was kind of a little bit of a surprise, because like you just said, I feel like majority of the time it's boys who do it. So, but yeah, just tragic and unnecessary. And I really, really hope for something that can change this. You know, I think it has to be quite a few different things to like go into effect, like in combination, to make things like this stop from happening. But yeah, they need to do something.
I concur.
But so kind of shifting gears into today's main story, we're going to be talking about the Anderson family Christmas killing that happened in Carnation, Washington. So, you know, Christmas is like, for a lot of people, great time of year, best time of year. You have family, friends around. It's like all about giving. You get to like look at all the pretty lights, watch all the Christmas movies, everything. Which is, I feel like, for majority of people, but not all, because as we've talked about, even in like prior years on our own show, this time of the year, the holidays can sometimes bring out the worst in people, you know, whether it's like problematic family history, greed, jealousy, or any other type of reason, the holidays can for sure turn disastrous, or in some cases, deadly. So this is a case where almost an entire family was wiped out on Christmas Eve for pretty much no apparent reason. So again, not very jolly of me to be sharing this right before Christmas, but it's part of the gig, you know?
It's what we signed up for.
Yeah, exactly. So on December 26th, 2007, Judith Anderson was expected to arrive at the United States Post Office, where she worked as a mail carrier in the town of Carnation, Washington. Carnation was a pretty rural town, just had about 2,500 residents, and it was located about 30 miles east of Seattle. And kind of a weird coincidence, it was about half the distance from Lake Sammamish State Park, which that was made infamous as one of Ted Bundy's, obviously the serial killer, but one of his hunting grounds during the summer of 1974. So right around that area-ish. So Judy's friend and coworker, Linda Thiel, she had last seen Judy on December 23rd. They, you know, wished each other Merry Christmas, gave each other a hug, and Judy told her that she'd see her after the day after Christmas when they were both scheduled to return to work. But when Judy didn't arrive to work by 7:45, Linda got pretty worried. She decided to make the short drive to Judy's home, which was located just outside of the town. Judy's house was located on a pretty large wooded property where she had lived for about 30 years with her husband, Wayne, who was an engineer for the Boeing Corporation. And Linda became even more alarmed when she got to their house, and after she was knocking and getting no answer, she realized that the front door was unlocked. And she knew that her friend always kept her door locked, so it was very unusual for it to just be, you know, completely free to walk in. So she turned the knob and she called out for them, but nobody was answering. So pushing the door open further, she looked into the living room, and there she saw the body of a man lying on the floor. You know, kind of like the craziness of just walking into that. She was a little unsure of what she was seeing at first, so she looked closer, and she saw two more bodies, that of a woman and what appeared to be a very small child. She ran to call 911 immediately. It was just after 8 a.m. when officers arrived. They found the bodies of a male and a female, and not one, but two children. All had been shot, with the adults shot multiple times. They began searching the property, and when they looked inside this like shed that they had in the backyard, they discovered two more bodies inside of there, a male and a female. The victims were soon identified as Judith and Wayne Anderson, ages 60 and 61, their son Scott Anderson and Scott's wife Erica, both age 32, and Scott and Erica's two children, Olivia, who was 5, and Nathan, who was 3. Oof. I know. So police taped and blocked off the property and called in the report of a multiple homicide. Soon, obviously, additional police officers came, homicide detectives and crime scene technicians were all swarming the property, as well as the homicide investigation that now just was laid out right in front of them. Police also needed to search the almost 5-acre property for evidence and other possible victims that might have been around. It was learned that Wayne and Judy Anderson were the property owners. Their son Scott and his family lived about 30 miles to the south in the town of Black Diamond. All the victims had not been heard from since December 24th. Erica's mother, Pamela Mantle, told investigators that her daughter, Scott, and their children had planned to spend Christmas Eve at the Andersons. Pam had spoken with Erica earlier on the 24th, and 2 days later received a visit from homicide investigators telling her that her daughter, son-in-law, and both of her grandchildren had been murdered, most likely on Christmas Eve. The news was, I mean, to say the least, just way too horrible to even comprehend for her. You know, I can't imagine that. Just knowing, thinking that your daughter's just going to her other side of the family's Christmas party for Christmas Eve, and then 2 days later hearing that they were all found murdered. I can't.
And I don't think it's okay that anybody was murdered, but when it's children that's 5 and 3 who are completely 1,000% innocent in whatever is going on, that just makes me so angry because none of it is necessary. It's all unnecessary, but it's very extra unnecessary for a 5 and a 3-year-old to be murdered.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Just the innocence goes without saying, because it's like, what in what world would they deserve any of that? Not that anybody does, but especially, like you said, children of that age. So the Andersons had 2 more adult children. There was Mary Victoria, who, after looking into it, it was discovered that she had to skip the Christmas Eve party at her parents', because she was sick. And she was given the terrible news of her family as well. But their other daughter, Michelle, she was 29. She was nowhere to be found at first. They didn't know where she was at. They were trying to get a hold of her. Investigators were informed that she and her boyfriend, Joseph McEnroe, lived on her parents' property in like a mobile home at the end of a long, steep driveway, just because their parents had such a large property that it was kind of like they had their own little spot there. Like it was so far away, you couldn't even see it from the main house. So they went up to the mobile home and it was locked and it was, and you know, they weren't home. It was empty. So police and investigators were still working the crime scene several hours later when they were told that Michelle and Joe had returned to the property in their car and they were asking to be let in because everything was obviously taped off. So the road leading up to the house had been taped off by the police. 2 detectives approached the couple to inform them of the homicides. According to a police report at the time Michelle Anderson arrived, there was a large police presence on the property. Yellow police tape was placed across the driveways and the yards. There were dozens of police vehicles, mobile command centers, helicopters flying over the property, and many uniformed people, like close personnel on the scene. There's also a lot of people in the press there with their own trucks, vans, and helicopters. So to say that this was like, you know, a very populated scene is like a big understatement. Like there was just so many different individuals there surrounding the house trying to figure this out, which makes sense because, you know, it was just a lot of people murdered at one time. Yeah. So even with all of this activity going on, detectives found it pretty odd that neither Michelle or her boyfriend asked what was going on. Like they weren't like, why are you all here? Like what's happening? They didn't even ask. They just were asking like, we need to get to our property, you know? So it's a pretty big red flag, I think.
Yeah, my first thing would be panicking. What the hell's going on? Like, what is happening? Somebody talk to me. Like, where is my family?
Right. Like, it wasn't like she wasn't asking where her parents were or why they weren't being allowed to return to their home. You know, it was just very weird. One of the investigators even said, I don't know what was wrong with them, but I just knew something was off. Because,
guilt,
like, that is...
Guilt is
yeah.
wrong.
Yeah, because it is weird. It's like, how would you not, like, be freaking out or, like, asking what happened? so he spoke with the second detective, and they decided to question Michelle and Joseph separately. At first, they told detectives a similar story. They had decided on December 24th to get married and left to drive to Las Vegas early that day. Wild decision, but okay. They said that they told Michelle's parents the news earlier that morning before leaving. And that was the last time that they had seen Wade and Judy Anderson. This is what they're claiming. So Michelle says that her parents were really happy for her, but were disappointed that she and Joe wouldn't be there to have dinner with the family. Because, you know, as we know, her brother Scott and his wife and the kids were expected for dinner that night. So when asked by detectives for details about their marriage and like them, you know, getting married in Las Vegas, like where the wedding was held and proof of marriage license, stuff like that, Michelle then changed her story, saying that they had gotten lost on the way driving to Las Vegas and they never made it. Instead, they had just turned around and returned to Washington without getting married.
You hear that?
Yeah.
That's the bullshit meter going up.
Yep. So as detectives continued to confront them for more details of the story, you know, they were in questioning for hours. And I think detectives were getting kind of a clear sign of like, okay, something more is going on here, because their story, I think they're, you know, they probably had the same bullshit meter that Lowe just had going on too. So of hours of them being in questioning, they both soon cracked. They both admitted that they had made up the story about getting married in case they were questioned by police. Now, both gave detailed confessions about the murders of Michelle's parents, brother, sister-in-law, niece, and nephew. The story that came about and that they told would be one of the most cold, brutal, and senseless crimes that had ever taken place in King County history. So it got pretty dark early on December 24th, 2007. Michelle Anderson and her boyfriend, Joseph McEnroe, armed themselves with a 9mm handgun and a .357 Magnum revolver that they had purchased from a pawn shop that summer. They drove the 200 yards from their trailer on her parents' property to her parents' home. The couple arrived to find Wayne and Judy Anderson preparing for their Christmas Eve guests, you know, getting the house ready, getting going on like cooking and all that. Wayne was in the front room and Judy was in the back of the house wrapping a few last minute gifts that she planned on putting under the tree before everyone got there. Joe made an excuse to go in the back room with Judy while Michelle stayed in the front room with her father. In moments of entering the house, Michelle pulled out the 9mm, pointed it, and shot at her father, but she missed. So when Judy heard the gunshots, she ran from the back room towards Wayne, and she was being closely followed by McEnroe. So seeing Wayne on the floor, still alive, McEnroe pulled out the .357 and shot her dad in the head, killing him instantly. He then turned and shot Judy as she began to scream. She fell to the floor, still screaming, McEnroe said. He says that he apologized to her before shooting her in the head, killing her. Which is odd, because it's like, if you feel like sorry about it, why are you doing it in the first place? But we'll get there. So they were aware that Michelle's brother, Scott, and his family were coming all the way from Black Diamond, and they didn't want them to immediately see the bodies when they got in the house. So that's why they dragged Judy and Wayne into the backyard shed. So that's why they were found back there. So Michelle and Joseph spent the next hour cleaning up the blood with blankets and towels. They then burned the evidence of their crime in the outdoor fire pit. About an hour or so later, Scott arrived with his wife, Erica, 5-year-old Olivia, and 3-year-old Nathan. And, oh, sorry, were you saying something?
Nope, I was just quietly mentally preparing for what you're about to continue with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe it wasn't so quietly, but
no, I definitely understand. Yeah, disclaimer, I guess I could have said it at the beginning, but it's gonna get like kind of really sad, like with like the children being murdered and details on that and stuff too. So disclaimer there before I get into that. But Scott and Erica and their family, they obviously were frequent visitors to the Anderson home. And they just felt comfortable enough to, you know, walk in, kick off their shoes, get comfortable, because obviously it was Scott's parents' house. So like they were just there visiting all the time and it just felt like a second home to them. So Scott sat down on the couch while Erica was busy on the other side of the room by the Christmas tree with the children. So Scott reacted quickly because his sister, Michelle, immediately pulled out her weapon and pointed it at him. You know, he's just sitting on the couch thinking they're celebrating Christmas Eve and like going to have like a nice time with his family. And then all of a sudden his sister is pointing a gun at him. So he reacts, like I said, pretty quickly. He charged at her and tried to stop her from shooting, but it was too late. Michelle told detectives that she shot at her brother 2 to 4 times, hitting him once in the neck. Her sister-in-law started screaming, and Michelle fired at her as well. Erica was trying to save her children, you know, shuffling across them across the room and over the couch to, like, kind of take cover. Erica had been shot twice, but she was still able to dial 911. So as the 911 operator came on the line, she could hear a woman scream, and then the line went dead. McEnroe had ripped the cordless phone out of Erica's hand. He saw that she had made a call, that it was connected to the police, so he literally tore the phone apart. The battery fell to the floor, which obviously disabled it, and Erica was then huddled with her children behind the couch. Olivia, the 5-year-old, was beneath her, and Nathan clutched to her chest. McEnroe stood over her as she was pleading with him not to shoot her, just, you know, begging. You know, things he says, like she said, you don't have to do this. He said that he then apologized and told her, yes, we do, before shooting her in the head. He continued firing, killing 5-year-old Olivia as well. Finally, McEnroe said that Nathan, the 3-year-old, had picked up the phone batteries from the floor and was holding them in his hand. McEnroe told detectives that the toddler looked at him with a, quote, look of complete comprehension as if he understood before he also shot him in the head.
Oh my God.
I know. I just can't believe, like, if he really thinks, if, you know, he was believing that the 3-year-old knew what was going on and was, like, aware and was terrified and was staring up at him, you have to be, like, the biggest monster to just then go ahead and, like, shoot him.
I can't fathom looking at a baby, and both of them are babies. I'm sorry, yeah. 5 years old, you're still a baby, you know.
Uh-huh, yep.
And pulling that trigger, like,
it's a different, like, kind of sick.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's told detectives that it looked like he was, you know, comprehending what was going on. But others say and believe that the 3-year-old didn't understand what was happening and was simply just, like, grabbing the batteries. So he picked them up. Like, they think that he was too young to understand that, like, his family were being murdered by 2 monsters, especially one of them being his you know, someone he's known his entire life. I mean, a short life, but as Aunt Michelle, you know, that's his aunt. And right. It's just, I don't know. So since Erica did call 911, police had been dispatched to the Anderson home that night after the disconnected 911 call. But before a unit could arrive, Michelle had padlocked the gate at the end of the driveway. So when police arrived, they couldn't access the road to the house. So they turned around and left without checking on the residents. That's why, as a result, the bodies went undiscovered for 2 days, which I think is just kind of crazy that you get a 911 call and you hear someone scream on it. And, like, you can't do anything about it if it's just locked. They're just kind of like, oh, I guess we're turning around. I mean, you'd think they would do more, but.
Yeah, consider it like a welfare check.
Like, right. Because clearly something was going on.
Definitely cause to try to go in.
Yeah, for sure. So after they had finished all of the murders, Michelle and Joe had planned to escape to Canada. They took the guns and dropped them over a bridge into a river outside of town. They then came up with a plan to say that they had been away in Las Vegas at the time of the murders. But, you know, their story quickly fell apart. And of course, everyone's question, the question on everyone's mind is like, why did they do this? Why? Why had Michelle and her boyfriend decided to kill her entire family on Christmas Eve? Like, what in the world could possibly make someone shoot three generations of their own family in cold blood? So Michelle admitted that she had been talking to McEnroe about killing her family for several months. She told investigators that she was, quote, tired of everybody stepping on her. She had decided that if her family did not start showing her respect by December 24th, that she would kill them all. So to kind of get to know Michelle Anderson a tiny bit better, like, who is this monstrous person? She was born in 1978, and most of the people who knew her growing up said that she was pretty quiet and seemed nice enough, but she was never, like, very outgoing or much of a popular girl in school. She tended to hang out with more of the misfits. She went to Cedar Crest High School, and one of her former classmates remembers Michelle complaining about her home life. She said that her parents were mean to her and that her father would hit her. However, she loved her older brother, Scott, and she would say that he was the only one in the family that she trusted. Later, not long before the murders, she began to tell neighbors that she was the black sheep of the family. During her confession, she related to detectives that her parents had often told her that she, quote, should have never been born, end quote. Now, again, this is all hearsay coming from Michelle. Nobody has confirmed that she was hit or that they would say these things to her. This is just what she was telling detectives. She says that she believed that she was a child that was given the least amount of affection and attention by her parents. But her saying this, a lot of friends and family members disputed this claim. Michelle's former neighbor said that Judith Anderson would bring food and other necessities to her daughter every month. Family members say that they never saw or heard about any abuse of Michelle by her parents. The Andersons were more private, but extended family members often spent time visiting them in their home, and everyone seemed to be relaxed and at home, you know, when they were in each other's presence. They said there was no indication of tension or conflict in their opinion. And also, too, you know, she said she felt like she had the least support and affection and attention from her parents, but they allowed her to live on their property, and they, like, brought her things and they supplied her with things. So I think that they were I mean, to me, that sounds like they were supportive and helpful in her life. So in 2002, Michelle met Joseph McEnroe online. McEnroe was born in San Jose, California. He was the oldest of three children born to Sean Johnson of Minneapolis. He had suffered from chronic illnesses as a child and was diagnosed with a serious blood disorder. He spent a lot of time online and would play Dungeons and Dragons for hours. He dropped out of high school and took a job at a fast food restaurant before the family moved to Arizona. He then started meeting women online. Before meeting Michelle, he traveled to meet one woman that he had gotten to know online who lived in South Carolina, but the relationship obviously hadn't worked out. So soon after that, he met Michelle in an online dating site in 2002, and then he ended up moving to Washington. He had told his mother that he and Michelle were planning to be married and start a family within 2 years. The couple rented a mobile home in Fall City, Washington at first, and McEnroe took a job at a Target store while Michelle was employed as a night security guard for Nintendo. At the same time, Michelle and her brother Scott, like I said, they were close and she would talk very highly of her brother. So her and Scott were trying to start an auto painting business together as well. Scott had a full-time construction job, but he painted cars on the side. He enjoyed this work, and he and his sister thought that they could make a go as business owners together. They took out a business license in 2002 under the name Pure Evil Customs, which is very fitting now if you think about it. But people began to notice a bit of an oddness about Michelle. Her and Joe specifically, because the couple rarely came out of their house for very long. And when they did, they seemed to kind of just shun any friendly advances by like neighbors away. They would just kind of like rudely ignore people. Like they clearly didn't. They just wanted to like be in their own bubble, I guess. They also would begin to fight with neighbors over very small things, like if a car was parked in their spot or a neighbor's cat was like in their yard, Michelle would especially yell and scream about it. Before long, she would calm down and apologize, but neighbors never knew what would set them off next. Michelle became friendly with her next door neighbor, though, and told her several times that her family was wealthy. However, Michelle herself said that she was struggling financially. She said that she and Joe were poor. She told a former classmate who tracked her down on Facebook that she had been diagnosed with severe anxiety and was supposed to take medication and see a therapist, but she couldn't afford it. Her high school friend then paid a visit to Michelle and Joe when they were in Fall River, and kind of when the friend was there, described them as being like very paranoid. The trailer that they lived in had black material covering the windows, and they told her it was because their neighbors were spying on them. Like they believed that the neighbors had tried to break in and were, you know, quote, out to get them. She also really thought that McEnroe was odd as well. He said that he was planning to marry Michelle, but he would change his last name to hers because he had broken off contact with his family over a disagreement that they had had. Joe's mother, Sean, said that she and Joe's siblings had been searching for him for almost 5 years before the murders, so they had like absolutely no contact with him. He had been angry with her and blamed her for ruining his credit after she was evicted from an apartment that he'd helped her to lease. And it was because of this eviction on his credit report that was making it difficult to rent an apartment with Michelle. So it may have been for this reason that the couple ended up moving onto the trailer on the Andersons' property earlier in the year before the murders had taken place. It seemed that Michelle had always believed that she was being slighted by her family. You know, she complained throughout her life about her parents, but always said, you know, said that she was close with her brother Scott. But that did seem to change, or at least Michelle believed it did, when Scott married Erica. So now, not only did Michelle feel pushed aside by her brother after his marriage, but also it was believed that her parents preferred her sister-in-law over her as well. It was believed by Michelle, I should specify.
Sounds like Michelle has some self-issues she had to work through.
Yeah, she sounds very, like, insecure, I guess, and, like, just the mentality that, like, everybody's out to get her and everybody's against her type deal is what I kind of get from that.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, too, just by hearing say that the mom was bringing her food and necessities and helping with money where they could. They necessarily didn't want her living with them still because it sounds like she probably wasn't self-motivated to keep her life afloat herself. Maybe she had a drug problem. Maybe she had some other kind of issue going on. But it sounds like it's a Michelle problem.
Yeah, 100%. Because even, you know, everybody around them is also being like, we never saw that or picked up on that. Like, it just kind of seemed like it was in Michelle's head. You know, it even says Michelle always felt like she was the least favorite of their children. And now even their daughter-in-law bumped Michelle further down, in her opinion, on the family totem pole. And then also when Scott and Erica began having children, Michelle felt even more ignored. Wayne and Judy, of course, you know, as any grandparents do, they were loving and excited about their grandchildren. And that left Michelle feeling slighted once again. Which it's like, how can you be jealous of, like, it's your little niece and nephew. Like, they're little kids. They're obviously going to get more attention than you.
As they should.
As they should, yeah. So, and her parents both still worked full-time demanding jobs. They were still helping to support their almost 30-year-old daughter. She had bounced around from job to job, and when she was short on money, her mother would bring her groceries or whatever she could to help her out. She'd even gotten her fill-in work at the post office when extra help was needed. And at the time of the murders, neither Michelle or Joe was employed. So it's like, wow, your mom really sounds like a monster. Like, she's helping you in every way that she can, but yet in Michelle's mind, she deserves to be murdered.
Yeah.
And never mind that when Michelle and Joe found themselves unable to pay their rent in the past, Judy and Wayne also allowed them to move into the mobile home on their property, and they didn't charge them rent for almost a year. You know, they were like, stay here, save your money, start building it back up. You know, I'm just like, how are you still saying that your parents are terrible to you when they're doing things like that for you?
I think I've just a lot of jealousy probably from the siblings as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, definitely. I know she said she was close to her brother, but when he got his new girlfriend, she felt that shift.
Yeah. And it's just like sad that, I mean, that she went that far into it mentally to think that it was that bad of a situation. And, you know, so they were living there for almost a year, not paying rent. And not only was Michelle not appreciative of this, she then began to complain that her parents had recently told the couple that they would have to begin paying rent in the new year. So she was like mad about it. They let them live there rent free for a year. And then they said, hey, once the new year starts, we're going to charge you guys a little bit of rent. And she was like pissed about this. Michelle also explained to detectives that she was angry with her parents because she claimed that her brother Scott owed her money, which he had not paid her. She said that over the years, he had borrowed close to $40,000. her parents refused to take her side in her beef with her brother, and this just, you know, enraged her, set her off. All of these complaints that she shared with her boyfriend Joe over the 5 years that they were together, neighbors who knew the couple said that Michelle was clearly the one in charge in the relationship, with Joe kind of doing her bidding type deal. And Michelle and Joe's next door neighbor in Fall River told a reporter for the Seattle Times that he often heard yelling coming from their trailer. Once he listened closely to see what all the yelling was about, and it was always Michelle yelling the loudest, he said, and he could hear her yelling at McEnroe, "You have no job, you have no money, you have no life." Another neighbor said that the couple often reported being in fear for their lives. And that makes sense, you know, if they had like black tarps up all around their thing, thinking that they were being watched. You know, the neighbor says there was this paranoia about them. They felt that they could only trust one another, that they could count on no one but each other. Prosecutors had everything that they needed to charge Michelle Anderson and Joseph McEnroe with 6 counts of aggravated murder in the first degree, a charge that could carry the death penalty. But detectives had one more question for the couple. Michelle had felt slighted by her parents and said she was emotionally abused by them and finally snapped. And according to Michelle, her brother had disrespected her by refusing to pay her the money that he owed her. And even if this was the case, they were completely baffled as to why they had also decided to kill his wife and their 2 children. Michelle said it was a combination of not wanting them to have to live with the memories and not wanting there to be any witnesses. Now,
I'm sorry. Also, if you have $40,000 that you're lending out, why the hell are you living in a not so great place and depending on your parents to bring you food and supplies?
That's what I don't believe. Like, I really, even if she lent him like a tiny bit of money, like one time years ago, I doubt it was $40,000. Like, I don't know. I think that she just was maybe saying that to like go along with her story or something.
Yeah, that's, if you have $40,000 to loan to someone, you're doing like really well off.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So McEnroe's explanation was a little bit more straightforward. He said, "I didn't want them to turn us in." He answered King County prosecutor Dan Satterberg. And they decided to seek the death penalty against both Joseph McEnroe and Michelle Anderson for the murder of her 6 family members. So given the magnitude of these alleged crimes, the killing of 3 generations of a family, and particularly the 2 really young children, you know, the prosecutor says, "I find that there are not sufficient reasons to keep the death penalty from being considered by the juries that will ultimately hear these matters," which he said in 2008. But while they both pleaded not insane as routine capital cases, Michelle Anderson told the press that she was guilty of the crime and that she actually wanted to receive the death penalty. So in a jailhouse interview in 2008, she said, "I need to be executed for everything I've done. I know what I've done, and I want to take responsibility for it." Her lawyers would have a difficult time defending Michelle, given her confession and statements to the press. I mean, obviously, you can't do much because she just full-on told the whole story of what happened. But they did begin making a case for her mental incompetence in order to save her life. So the background in mental health history of this defendant make her an inappropriate candidate for a death sentence, one of her lawyers, Steve Isla, told reporters. At first, Michelle didn't agree to a court-appointed psychiatric assessment, But when she was finally forced to do it, the psychologist determined that she was mentally competent to stand trial. You know, Anderson said there are no mitigating factors as the case drags on. She says, I've been evaluated by 3 doctors and I've been found competent. My lawyers are trying to force me into a life sentence because they're opposed to the death penalty. She also blamed herself for getting her boyfriend mixed up in murder. She says, I don't want to say who did what. We both shot people, but this is all my fault. I dragged him into it in January 2014, 6 years after his arrest. Joseph confessed to the murders in order to try and avoid a death sentence. So she wanted the death sentence and he did not. Now, in December of that year, his trial finally began. So on March 25th, the jury found him guilty of 6 counts of aggravated first-degree murder. At a sentencing hearing, he said that he took responsibility for his part in the murders, but also said that he had been manipulated by his girlfriend, Michelle. He says, I did it because I had to. I was her attack dog. And this is what he told the judge. The jury was split 8-4 in favor of death. So he was then sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
I'm sorry. They can both. Sorry. Continue.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm sorry. They can both go away for a very, very long time. And by for a very long time, I mean forever and ever and ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't like that he's like, I did it because she made me do it. It's like, dude.
No, you're a grown man and you know the difference of murder and don't murder people.
Mm-hmm. Bingo, what she said. So while Michelle had long asserted that she wanted to plead guilty and receive the death penalty for her role in the murders, by 2014, when that time rolled around, she had changed her mind. The prosecutor decided not to seek the death penalty after all, since juries had rejected the sentence of death or 2 other capital murder cases the previous year, including Joseph McEnroe's. So in March 2016, Michelle Anderson was finally convicted of 6 counts of aggravated first-degree murder. The following month, she stood before the judge to receive her sentence. But first, the judge spoke to victims' family members, acknowledging the terrible pain that they had endured over the many years between the time their loved ones were murdered and the final outcome in court, with more than 8 years of legal wrangling. Judge Ramsdale said, "You have all suffered tremendous losses. This lengthy chapter of your nightmare is almost over." The victims' families were allowed to speak next. So Pamela Mantel, who was Erica's mother, she addressed Michelle directly. She said, "When you shot her, she called 911 not to just save herself, but to save her babies because she knew that you would kill them too. I don't think you're big and tough, Michelle," she said. "And grandchildren's murderer, I think you're a bully. I am heartbroken every day. I miss those 6 people." Michelle's sister, the one that was sick, Mary Victoria Anderson, she testified also at the trial that she would have been killed too if she hadn't been ill that Christmas Eve. At the sentencing, she was very emotional when addressing her younger sister. She says, "It kills me. I loved you so much," she told Michelle, before adding that Michelle would have a lot of time to think about how much she ended so many people's lives as she spent the rest of her life in prison, for that was the sentence that she would receive. The only possible punishment the judge could now hand down for her crime was life in prison without the possibility of parole. It had taken over 8 years for justice to be done and Michelle Anderson to be put in prison for the murder of her family members. That's crazy. 8 years this took. I feel like it should have been so much faster than that because they came out pretty quickly after and confessed to all of it.
Was she at least behind bars for the 8 years?
Yes, but you know, she, it had taken like 8 years before like the full sentencing had take place, which is just insane.
Yeah. Especially when she's basically confessed.
Right. Yeah. She even said like, you know, yeah, even in the beginning, she was like wanting, she was asking for the death penalty because that's how, you know, how much she was like confessing to it. So the total cost estimated for the investigation and two trials exceeded $11 million, which is insane. The investigation was estimated at about $1.7 million. And the cost to defend Joseph McEnroe was $4.7 million. And Michelle Anderson's defense team cost the state approximately $5.2 million. And yet, we really don't still have like an answer for the real reason that Michelle Anderson decided to kill her entire family on Christmas Eve. You know, the court found her mentally competent to stand trial, but was she like actually competent, or was there some more mental illness going on? Her belief that she was being prosecuted not just by her family, but her neighbors and strangers certainly suggests that she may have been suffering from some type of delusions, especially like, you know, boarding up your window saying that people are spying on you and out to get you. There might have definitely been some type of mental illness there going on, and just deranged thinking that your whole family is like so totally against you that you have to kill them. Like, I would probably agree that there was some type of mental thing going on, if not drugs, but there was no mention of drugs at any point in this.
Well, I feel like there was probably some sort, something with the hallucinations, obviously some mental health. There's a lot of things going on. I think maybe part of it too, you didn't really say, but, and maybe they didn't admit it, but maybe they thought they would be getting some kind of inheritance. Like if you take out the entire family, all the money would go to them.
Right.
Maybe there wasn't money to give to them, or because they were just too stupid and got caught like very early on, which I'm glad they're stupid and got caught because they deserve to be punished. But
yeah, I was curious like why they returned so soon. You know what I mean? Like when obviously like police were there and things were being investigated. I think it's kind of interesting that they just like went back home that soon, you know, instead of being like, let's stay out of town for a while and say that we were out of town the whole time. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe it was kind of like, if we don't go back, it's Christmas. So if we don't show up at all, why were we not there on Christmas with our family? If we do show up, then how come we survived? So I feel like in the very beginning, it was a very terrible thought out plan. Like they didn't think it through very well at all from the beginning. Unnecessary, didn't need to be done. And I just pray that they never see the light of day. We've said this many times when it comes to death penalties, I'm like, yes, they don't deserve to live, take them away, and let's not pay the taxes on them. But at the same time, I'm like, we give them the death penalty. It's the easy way out. They're not being punished. I think they each need to be in solitary confinement for like 20 years by themselves with no other people around until they just literally go crazy, crazier, you know, I don't know, some kind of room where they have to see pictures of their family that they killed, those victims, over and over again every day for the rest of their lives. Like just torture them.
Right. Yeah. Because I think that that's, I mean, I don't know. I just would assume that that would be worse than like the death penalty, like worse punishment, you know, a more actual punishment instead of just being like gone, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I always feel like prison's a little bit more of a torture. I know they're alive, but they have to think about that every day.
Right.
of how their life could have been different, what happened. I feel like when you kill them, they're just gone. They're just done. Like, they don't have to suffer, you know?
Yeah. I kind of think that too.
I know. Phoebe's like, I am ready to go.
We have a guest.
They're both in here.
Oh, both of the puppies. They wanted to hear the end of the story. But yeah, that was the end of it. Literally stupid, insane, senseless, and just pure evil. I feel like pure evil describes those two.
You see Auntie Crystal. Do you see Auntie Crystal on the TV?
Hi, baby. Hi.
I'm just trying to kiss you through the screen. I'm scared she's going to hit the delete button. I know. She'll come back and see you soon.
Hi.
Phoebe loves her Auntie Crystal.
The love is mutual. The love is mutual.
Well, oh, yes. Hi, Lola's. Hi, Lola. Lola's like, I'm here too.
Hey, girl.
She's just a little lot shorter.
Yeah, I can't see her, but...
I had her up here once for a minute, but then she jumped down.
Yeah.
I know. You guys ready to go out? Okay. Go side.
Perfect timing then, because we are wrapped up for this story.
Well, thank you for bringing this dark nightmare to our lives.
You're very welcome.
I feel like this is a little bit like the one we did. I don't think it was last year. It was the year before. I think it was was it a Thanksgiving or a Christmas?
Yeah, morning? I think it was Thanksgiving. It might have been Christmas though.
Even with a guy showed up. It was like an uncle or son, unannounced, uninvited, and took out the whole family, even the little ones. It's like, why the little ones though? I don't understand. Like,
yeah, I will never you're like a whole new level of evil when you do something like that, in my opinion.
The only thing I can say, the only thing that comes out of it is that 5-year-old little girl is not going to be in years and years of therapy after watching her mom and dad get killed first.
Mm-hmm.
And wonder, like, where is my mom and dad? And, like, all that suffering.
Right.
At least she's in heaven with her parents. But, again, not cool, bro. Like, unnecessary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no reason for it. I'm glad that they will be in prison the rest of their lives, as they should be. So Merry Christmas, guys, for that one.
Thanks.
you guys will hear this the week of Christmas. And then me and Lo are going to step back, enjoy the holidays, busyness, craziness going on, and we'll be back after the new year with a new episode for you. So we're taking a little break.
We sure are. You know, we tried to do it the last couple years of keeping it going, but then we're like, do people really even listen with all the hustle and bustle and time off? And then it makes it, you know, we try to keep the quality of the show great for you guys, but also keeping up with our family and shopping and baking and cooking and traveling. And so we figure let's just enjoy the holidays and not, you know, put the stress on if we're going to please you guys by the quality of the episode, because we're probably saying it exhausted.
Right, exactly. Plus, as they say, the heart grows fonder. So you'll miss us. So you'll be like waiting to hear back from us. So you'll be like, where are my HWC girls at?
And it'll be 2025 when we come back. Can you imagine 2025? I mean, you can, because it's next week.
Wild.
But I'm just like,
I can't imagine.
Back in the day, I honestly thought we'd be the Jetsons by now. Seriously.
Dude, I know. I mean, with some of the things, it's a little crazy, but definitely not quite at Jetson's level yet.
Right.
But yeah, I cannot even believe that. So, before we... Well, I guess as we say goodbye, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, you filthy animals.
Keep the change. And in that case... I guess we'll log out because the shitter's full.
And to that I say, stay creepy.
Bye.
Bye.